You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 43 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you live from not Renton, not the home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks, but live from Boulevard Park, Washington, the place where it all started, both the Fabulous Peltons and the Fabulous Pelton Cast.
Both we started and this podcast started. And we are back! It feels so good to be back in Boulevard Park. You know that I love being here. Oh, it feels good.
I feel like these are sometimes some of our best episodes. They get a little bit off the rails. Actually, that's usually because you've usually been drinking
almost
beforehand.
Almost always. Always when I'm in Boulevard Park, I've been drinking first.
It's the only way you can see fit.
Childhood was very long for me. Those first 18 years were exhausting. But it always feels good to be back. We are here where it all began. You can hear the echo of your kitchen right now. You can hear the planes flying over.
Yes, you can.
I'm so excited.
We're also very near Georgetown, which is the home of the beer you have today.
Oh, well, what a great transition. And we are drinking here right now from our good friends at Georgetown Brewing Company, the Sally Justice ISA Imperial Session Ale.
Interesting. Tell me more.
And Georgetown Brewing Company, who now all of a sudden have so many part-time and seasonal beers, this being one of them. For normal people, darn tasty ISA. For beer lovers, it tastes like oranges and sunshine and liberty.
I love that that's all caps. That's very appropriate.
Named after briefly acting Attorney General Sally Yates, this ISA.
A toast to Sally Yates. One of the finest acting attorney generals in this country's history.
She may have only been acting attorney general for like 10 days, but she managed to get this beer in Seattle, Washington named after her.
That's an accomplishment. How many beers in Seattle did Eric Holder have named after him?
Almost none.
Exactly.
What do you think of this beer?
It's pretty good.
It's a good beer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Typically, as you know, I'm not a fan of the S in ISA. That's an Imperial Session Ale.
You're a fan of S if it refers to stout.
Or sour.
Yeah, sour, definitely.
But in this scenario, it's good to just drink a beer that tastes like beer.
And not like generic beer, like Rainier tastes like beer?
I would be happy to be drinking it, right? When I'm back in Boulevard Park, I would be excited to drink a Rainier.
That is true. I mean, we're not far from Georgetown again.
Yeah, not one, numerous Rainiers. But...
but not today. I also wanted to pour one out here.
Oh.
I don't know if you saw that former KSTW sportscaster, sports director Rod Simons passed away of a heart attack while covering twin spring training.
Trending on Twitter and had no idea who that was.
Yeah, I think he's a little before your time. He did some stuff for Fox Sports Net as well, but then went to Minneapolis and was a longtime sports anchor there. But definitely going back, I have memories of him, you know, covering the Mariners in particular in the very early 90s.
Rod Simons?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that New York Vinny died.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
And
the Babe? Wasn't she a sportscaster?
The Fabulous Sports Babe, yes.
Well, may they all live for many more years if they're still alive.
Let's hope so.
R.I.P. to Rod Simons. But we have a huge podcast ahead of us. Most importantly, you are back in Seattle. You're not just back in Boulevard Park. You are back in Seattle. You are in New Orleans for the last week and have all sorts of behind-the-scenes info for us.
Something like that. Yes, one of those planes flying over my house brought me back from New Orleans earlier this evening. It was an interesting weekend, and not really because of anything that happened on the court.
Okay, so let's start right there, right? The game, All-Star Saturday night happens, Friday night, celebrity game, nothing too eventful, Win Butler dominates.
Got robbed of the MVP.
Who won the MVP?
Brandon Armstrong, who was an NBA player and now is known for like doing impressions.
Oh, that guy?
Yeah.
He was an NBA player?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think he played for the Nets.
People who played in the NBA should not be allowed into the All-Star game or into the celebrity game. All-Star game.
I mean, they have legends out there too, you know. Like, like let's see who is playing now. I can't think. Jason Williams was out there.
Which
Baron
one?
Baron Davis, the one who played for the Kings, White Chocolate.
Oh.
It was a little bit of a preview of the 3x3 league that's coming, because I think Baron Davis and Jason Williams
is Wynn Butler playing in that one too.
He should be. Wynn Butler's got a nice game.
An all Arcade Fire team.
Anyway, he was robbed.
So All Star Friday night happens. Nothing eventful happens. All Star Saturday night. I want to hear if you have any thoughts on that later. We saw your grades. We all question why you have grades for things that are already graded.
For the dunk contest?
Yes.
But they grade each individual dunk. They don't grade like the whole thing as a whole.
They more or less do, though.
I suppose.
You can average the grades. You graded something that's already graded. And a three-point contest where literally they're just counting. How do you grade things that they're counting?
Very carefully.
Very carefully. He spent hours thinking of these grades. And then also the
I like the skills challenges, which are going to is the most ridiculous challenge, thing.
They time people. All three technically they do not be graded.
Technically they do not time people anymore. It's because it's head to head.
Oh, by the way, Isaiah, I don't know how somehow was robbed though.
Exactly. I've been saying it.
That was the biggest letdown of a skill. The most that I've ever cared about the skills challenge, and the biggest letdown of a skills challenge.
More than last year when Isaiah actually made the finals.
Oh, and he lost in the finals. I don't know. I don't pay attention to the skills challenge. All I do is read your grades after.
Exactly. That's the best way to appreciate the skills challenge. But anyways.
The game happens, but then the real game is happening on Twitter during the All-Star game, where there's conversation about Boogie. Walk us through your night.
Yeah, the news of the DeMarcus Cousins trade breaking. It was fascinating because you've got basically all of the NBA reporters out there in the same building covering this game. And so starting with, you know, when Woj's first tweet came out saying that the Kings and Pelicans had had talks about Cousins, like I was walking into the lobby with two national reporters and we like start discussing the possibility of this trade. And that set the tone for the entire night where, you know, at first it was like the thing I said to those other reporters was, okay, well, my next week just changed because I'm assuming I'm going to have to write a bunch of things about Cousins trade speculation, where might he go, who can put together the best package. But at some point in the evening, it became clear, like, this is not something that might happen by Thursday. It's something that's going to happen, might happen tonight.
Yes.
And even still, like, after the game, I didn't quite realize how close it was until I went to go ask Mark Stein kind of what he knew about the trade.
Name dropping again.
Yeah. And he was unable to talk because he was busy tweeting out a statement from Cousins' agent saying that he would not re-sign with any team that traded for him, basically telling teams that they shouldn't trade for him, which apparently scared off one team, as Vlade Divac told reporters yesterday. But
Okay, so Vlade seemed kind of depressed about this.
he kind of looked terrible, I got to be honest.
He looked terrible just like physically, or he looked terrible as a GM? Or
well,
combo.
Yeah, combo. I meant the physical state. He looked like it had been a long weekend for him. But yeah, he alluded to having
a better trade 2 days before.
Yeah, and so what happened is Cousins' agent told that team that he wouldn't re-sign with them if they traded for him, that they would only get him for the next year and a half left on his contract, and that convinced them to pull out.
They could write a screenplay called A Year and a Half with Boogie.
But this is so because the trade was.
Why was Boogie's agent telling teams that he wouldn't re-sign with them?
So this was a financial disaster for Boogie. Above and beyond the fact that he apparently really liked playing in Sacramento, when he was with the Kings, he was eligible for this new designated veteran extension that they put in the current CBA, which would have paid him about $210 million, depending where the cap gets set, over the next 5 years, starting in 2018-19. Now the most he can make is an estimated $180 million. So it's a $30 million swing.
Wow. Long All-Star game for Boogie, and he didn't even get to play in the game, really.
Yeah, that was the other sign that something was happening, the fact that he got taken out after 2 minutes. Like, obviously, they didn't want to risk anything happening to him during the All-Star game.
Okay, so Steve Kerr knew first.
Yes.
He knew before Woj. He could have had a Woj bomb.
I don't know if he knew that it was final, but he knew that it was something that was pretty seriously being discussed.
If you're pulling somebody out of the All-Star game, that has to be pretty close to final.
As I noted in my column, we got the Jahlil Okafor treatment, and that didn't turn out to be final.
Okay. That would be like next level if you sat somebody out to try to increase their trade value if you sat them out of the All-Star game.
Yeah, that'd be pretty next level. No, I mean, I don't think that's why they sat out Okafor out. There was some speculation from another executive about that. But then the reporting over the weekend was that the Blazers were very close to dealing for Okafor before they got Yusuf Nurkic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who would they have traded? Would they have traded Plumlee for Okafor?
Probably not, because I don't think the Sixers would have had any interest in Plumlee. I don't know what the trade would have been.
Huh. Well, that's kind of interesting. Yeah. Anyway, so what's going on behind the scenes? When did you start writing about this?
So,
or did word come out that everything was final?
So I talked to Stein when I was going from my seat in the arena down to the media room. And by the time I actually got to the media room, Anthony Davis was doing his press conference as the MVP of the game, a really jovial press conference. And he's asked about the possibility of playing with Cousins and talks about, you know, how great he is and how much he would enjoy it. At that point, we knew it was close, but didn't know it was final. And then basically right as Davis walked off the stage, got the word.
Do you think they were waiting so he didn't look bad?
No, I don't think so. I think that was just a coincidence.
Okay.
I mean, Woj certainly wouldn't have been waiting for anything.
Woj waits for nobody.
Oh, no. He waits for no man. He's got news. He's breaking it. But so I had to finish the All-Star grades kind of ridiculously.
Yes.
And then I had left my mouse at my seat, so I had to walk all the way back up there. And that gave me kind of a chance to, like, you know, collect my thoughts, because this was such a stunning trade that, you know, it's not like the usual trade grade where I can just kind of bang it out within an hour. Like, I had to really...
You're phoning in these trade grades usually.
I am not phoning them in. I'm just working quickly.
Okay.
But this one needed some time. So
you're like an artist who they've worked their entire life to get to those... Any trade grade that you make has years of history behind it.
It does. There's the story, I think it's supposed to be Picasso. Yeah. Like, yeah, they say, can you sketch, the person at a restaurant says, can you sketch something on the napkin, and then I'll pay you whatever you think it's worth. And he sketches something, and the person, and then he says, well, that'll be $10,000, and or whatever the financial equivalent would be. And the person says, but it took you 30 seconds to do. And he's like, no, it took me 30 years to do.
That's what you do with trade grades. Anytime you grade anything, like a trade that I put together, me and the babies.
It's all getting reps.
That took me 30 years to do. So, B minus.
So anyways, this okay. It's probably about 11:30 by the time I actually start writing. And about 1:15, they kicked us out of the media room. And I had to walk back to the media hotel with Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post, who was one of the other handful of people left there. And then went back to my room.
Did you have one of those classic walking at nighttime, talking about life, discussing boogie?
Yeah, we were just talking about the trade.
You're looking at the stars. You're like...
Couldn't see the stars. It was a little foggy.
Oh, okay.
But it's like a very memorable life event, that walk, I feel like. Just that whole night.
You're like walking along the boardwalk with Tim Bontemps talking about boogie.
There was no boardwalk involved. So I go back to my room, file the grades at a little before 2 in the morning.
Okay.
Which is by far the latest I've ever filed a trade grade.
Really?
Yeah.
Was your editor up?
Yes.
Somebody posted these.
Yeah. Oh, and they were up like within 5 minutes. It was a very quick turnaround.
Really?
And leading the site not long after that.
Oh, nice. Okay, so your trade grades were on sports. They're on ESPN, the network, a place that you don't see that often. They were on ESPN, the network, on the bottom line.
Yeah, scrolling
all day.
Along. Yeah, which is a thing we had talked about doing last week. Someone had came to my editor and I with that idea, and we kind of hashed out what it would look like and how that would work. And the timing proved to be really fortuitous, because there it was. On Monday, I went to lunch with my old editor and a couple other ESPN people, and there was a TV in the back of the room, and you'd see it scrolling through.
That's kind of amazing. I feel like this is like the perfect storm for your trade grades being on ESPN. It's like a national holiday, so a lot of people are at home and just have their TVs on ESPN. And at the bottom, all day long, from morning until night, they're your trade grades.
Yeah, I got a text from a friend who saw them, a few tweets, so it was very cool.
Did you get any negative feedback? Because there's like so little information.
No, I did not get negative feedback.
Okay. And we've been working years on those.
Someone things. Felt teased because they went and saw that my work was insider and they didn't have insider.
That happens pretty often, though.
No, that didn't actually happen.
Anything else about the boogie trade? What was the conversation around it generally? Did the people in the media feel the same way that everybody else seems to feel, that the trade swung massively towards the Pelicans?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of people trying to kind of understand how this went down, trying to make sense of it.
Okay. Is there any way to make sense of it?
The way that I've made sense of it is, I think the Kings front office wanted to trade Boogie because they felt that they could never win with him in the locker room and on the court, and sometimes not on the court because he's getting suspended for accumulation of technicals. And so to them, it almost didn't matter what they got in return. And the reason that this trade was made was because Vivek Ranadive was so enamored of Buddy Hield.
That's what I was thinking. So wait, this trade 2 days prior that they had that was a better trade, Vivek would have gone for this? I mean, you don't know.
I don't know. But Vlade was clearly blaming Cousins' agent for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just that Vivek somehow, here's the way that I imagine it, is Vivek watched the NCAA tournament last year.
Yes.
Missed Oklahoma's last game. Is unaware that age matters. Hasn't updated his opinion of Buddy Hield since he's been in the NBA.
Yes.
Do you feel like that combination of four things happened?
Also, five, loves drafting shooting guards.
Don't forget centers also.
No, Vlade loves drafting centers. Vivek loves drafting shooting guards.
It's just like, I was thinking on it, I was like, that had to be what happened. Because if I'm somebody who just paid attention to Buddy Hield in the beginning of the NCAA tournament last year, I'm like, Buddy Hield has Steph Curry potential.
Yep.
And also, if you're unaware how old he is.
I mean, you know, Steph was older when he became Steph. So I don't know if that's a death knell. But the fact that he's played so poorly this season and is also so old for a rookie, that's a bad combination. That's what you don't want.
So besides Boogie, tell us about an All-Star Weekend in New Orleans.
So it's kind of wild because normally when they do All-Star Weekend in New Orleans, they do it on years where Mardi Gras has already completed. But in this case, because of the fact that they moved it from Charlotte at kind of the last minute because of the bathroom bill there and North Carolina's refusal to amend that, it happened during the second to last week of Mardi Gras. And so there's a bunch of these different parades that are taking place all over downtown throughout the weekend, which is kind of bizarre. Like, you'll just be walking along and more or less stumble into a parade.
Can you join the parades?
I don't know. I did not attempt to.
Is it true that you can drink in public in New Orleans?
That is true. Yeah.
I would parade for almost anything if I could drink in public.
I mean, it's not just during parades. It's at all times.
All times.
Yeah. There's no open container law.
What about just being in New Orleans, though?
I think New Orleans is a great all-star city because, like, everything's very walkable. The food is amazing. Also, I can't believe we've gotten this far. We haven't talked about oysters.
Okay. I'm waiting to hear. You said you had a celebrity sighting.
Oh, that's true.
I've been waiting for days for this celebrity sighting. It better be good.
On Saturday, we tried to go to brunch at this place near the arena, and we're told it was like a 45-minute wait. So
45 minutes is, first off, not that long.
Not that long. But
I was going to say, what is this, Portland? But 45 minutes is really not that long at
all. It's not. But we were hungry at that point.
Portlanders would gladly wait 45
minutes. But someone who was willing to wait and was at this restaurant and seemed to be waiting, for some reason they did not have enough pull, was Solange.
Really?
Yeah. New Orleans denizen, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
That is not at all who I was expecting.
Yeah. I mean, you were probably expecting to be someone who was in town for All-Star Weekend.
You think Solange is famous enough that she can just not wait at a
brunch? Oh, yeah. Solange was on stage at the Grammys last week. Remember?
There were a lot of people on stage at the Grammys.
Not that many of them were in this brunch restaurant.
You think... Let's say Busta Rhymes wants to go to brunch in New Orleans.
I think Busta Rhymes is getting a table.
Busta Bus is definitely getting a table right away.
First off, he's probably being a lot more forceful trying to get a table than Solange is. She's just going to write a moderately sad song about it.
About waiting for brunch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's a pretty good celebrity sighting.
Yeah, I felt good about that one.
That's not bad. That was kind of out of nowhere, out of left field celebrity sighting.
Yeah.
Was there anybody else who you saw celebrity-wise?
Outside the celebrity game?
Yeah, not that many celebrities in that one.
Yeah, that's fair. Stephen A. Smith was at the hotel bar when I was there watching the UW game on Thursday night.
That's exactly where I imagine him to be.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
He was like holding court in the back of the hotel bar.
Holding court?
I mean, it was like him and three people.
It was like First Take back there.
Every once in a while, like, you'd hear Stephen A. Smith from the other side of the bar. It's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's Stephen A. I mean, there was like, it was almost deserted at that point because
the Husky game was on?
Yeah. No,
I understand.
They took pity on me and put it on even though they had already had last call at that point. So it was emptying out. Just Stephen A. Smith and me.
Basically. Yeah, and he doesn't abide by last call rules.
I mean, why would you? Stephen A. Smith, you don't need to.
What about the food in New Orleans? Okay, so you said oysters. So we've gone this far without talking about oysters.
So as we discussed last week, I had never had an oyster in my life. And had them for the first time on Sunday.
Okay, so
at
if
dinner.
We say on this, wait, finish what you're gonna say.
What?
If we say something on this podcast, like, will that happen within the next week? All of a sudden, if I'm like
I've what else?
Never won the lottery in my entire life, is that gonna happen by next week? It's just amazing that you went how many years, 34 years or whatever, without having an oyster. You say it on this podcast, and then within the week, you have an oyster.
I mean, it's not that weird because I was going to New Orleans, and New Orleans is
a
place
that's
famous.
You've been to New Orleans before.
Yeah, but I hadn't been to, like, restaurants in the French Quarter. Like, I go to a different type of restaurant in New Orleans than I was going to with my old editor, who is much more into kind of the, like, you know, fish and oyster houses.
Okay.
Anyways. They were pretty good, especially.
Oh, you're in on oysters.
Kind of.
I was prepared for you to say that you hated oysters.
No, I quite like them, and especially like we had like blackened oysters, like those were phenomenal. So I had them at three consecutive meals at one point.
What?
Yeah. We really. I just went from 0 to 60 on my oyster.
Wow, 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah,
with oysters.
So now I will be looking to incorporate oysters into my regular diet.
Man, it's unfortunate that you missed that oyster burger at Lil Woody's.
I know. I probably would have enjoyed it.
So shocked. I need to take a moment to look out over this beautiful Rainier Valley.
Is that? I don't think that's the Rainier Valley. By the way,
what do you call it?
The Rainier Valley is on the other side.
Well, I'm looking pretty far.
Okay.
Is that the Duwamish Valley?
Yes, I think that's what you would call that.
Okay. This is the river of our childhood. The river of our youth. Anything else about New Orleans? What kind of food did you eat besides oysters? It sounds like maybe you ate those for every meal.
Yes. So my favorite restaurant in New Orleans is this sandwich place named Cochon Butcher.
Okay.
I went there twice in 3 days last time I was in New Orleans for the All-Star game. Went there twice this time as well. That was the place we ended up going after the brunch spot that we didn't want to wait 45 minutes for. And had kind of the most amazing thing today. I had always seen it on the menu and been curious about it, but had never pulled the trigger and ordered it. They have what they call the Pig Mac.
Okay.
Which, so their specialty, cochon, means pig in French. And it's a Big Mac, except instead of the beef patties, it's all pork patties.
Huh.
And it was like an amazingly faithful recreation of a Big Mac.
Wait, really?
Like with the right kind of cheese and special sauce
really?
And the lettuce. It was phenomenal.
Really?
I loved it. So that remains my favorite spot. And then they also have attached to it, they have a sit-down restaurant that's just cochon. And I had never been there, but because usually you don't get to eat dinner when you're at the All-Star game because the game is at night, to mm-hmm. state the obvious. But because of the fact that I stayed over an extra day, I went with a few other NBA writers to dinner there on Monday night, and it was just terrific.
Huh.
Yeah. And then
I'm fascinated by this Pig Mac.
Yeah.
I never could. Can you describe how the
there's
pig?
There's a photo of it on Instagram. I mean, it's not exactly a sausage patty because it's not like ground up, but it's kind of in that vein,
huh.
If that makes sense. So then I went to Café du Monde, I think, three times for beignets.
Okay, I was going to say, are there beignets?
Oh, yeah, of course there are beignets. I only had one po' boy. That was a little disappointing.
What kind of, you're having a shrimp po' boy?
Yeah, and it was a shrimp and oyster po' boy.
Oh, of course.
But that
because you just eat oysters now.
It was not a very good one. It was really? It was a poor one by po' boy standards.
Wow, a po' boy.
Yeah.
Man, I want to go to New Orleans.
New Orleans is great from a culinary standpoint.
I can just hang out with Solange, eat beignets. When you get the beignets,
yes.
Tell me, like, is it a place that you walk into? Like, is it a sit down beignet place or like a truck?
It's a sit down place. I mean, it's been there for long before there were food trucks. It's been there for decades.
But do you just go in and order beignets, or do you have to order food also?
The only thing they have on the order menu is beignets as far as food.
Really?
And then there's a variety of drink options. But, like, you can get it, wait for a table and sit down and do it that way. And then they also have a to-go window.
How do the beignets come out? Are they in, like, a paper bag?
If you get the to-go one, yes.
Oh, man, I want some beignets.
With just, like, a giant amount of powdered sugar at the bottom.
Oh, yeah. I want some beignets right now.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
God, I wish we didn't live in Seattle. Oh, I hate Boulevard Park.
Stop lashing out.
Okay. Boulevard Park is great.
While we're on the topic of food, do you have an update for us on our decision to talk about burgers and rate burgers, the best, our search for Seattle's best hamburger?
I just got a calendar update that today is Margarita Day.
So, oh, there you go.
Yeah, we've flipped over. We're past midnight now, so it's Margarita today. I did some research, texted around, talked to people. You know, I went out in the streets.
Did you?
And I came up with what I think is a pretty solid list of 16 burger places for us to go to.
Now, you described it to me as a bracket. Is it actually going to be a bracket?
I mean, it's 16, so it could be a bracket.
It could be.
We can decide exactly what we want it to be, but let me know if you have any feedback on these, okay?
All right.
Okay. So, and I'm thinking we do one per week, right?
That seems reasonable.
Okay, 16 burger places. Number one, I won't say the number. Dick's.
Okay.
Lil Woody's.
Yeah.
Katsu Burger.
Which we've never been to.
I mean, a lot of these we've never been to. If we'd been to all the burger places, we wouldn't be reviewing burger places. Zippy's.
Mm-hmm.
You Need a Burger.
Uh-huh.
Loretta's.
Yeah.
I mean, Tavern Burger. Like, just pencil it in number one.
Clubhouse later.
I mean, to me, the real battle is between Dick's and Loretta's. But, okay, Loretta's, Red Mill. By the way, nearby South Park.
Loretta's?
Yes. Yes. Red Mill. Linda's.
Yeah.
206 Burger Company.
Not familiar with that.
There are a couple that I found on the internet.
Okay.
8 Ounce Burger Bar.
That's in Capitol Hill?
Yes. I've been there years ago. Blue Moon Burgers.
Uh-huh.
Rain City Burgers. Skillet.
Oh.
The Swinery.
I definitely never had the Skillet Burger. Let me tell you, of all the things at Skillet, I have never once thought to order the burger. Like, never crossed my mind.
Here's your chance. The Swinery in West Seattle.
Don't know that one.
Kid Valley.
Yep. I haven't had a good Kid Valley burger in years, and I'm missing out.
And Cali Burger.
Yeah.
Does that seem like a good list?
Which Cali Burger, for those... I don't know if we discussed this Steak on the podcast. Out. Yes. Knockoff In-N-Out.
Does that feel like a good list of burgers?
It feels like a good list of burgers.
I mean, I put in hours on this list of burgers.
I appreciate that effort.
Yeah.
A toast to you.
I don't have any beer left, but yeah, I always like to be toasted too.
Yeah.
So we'll figure out what we're going to start with next week and exactly how. We don't need to determine right away if it's a bracket or not, right?
No.
But to me, I think we just do a ranking.
Yes, I think so too. A rating and a ranking. And okay. It's a guide to Seattle's best burgers. Peltoncast guide to Seattle's best burgers.
And so if anybody has any feedback, let us know about burger places that you would like us to go to or you think are very solid. To me, the thing that I wanted to avoid are like fancy restaurants that also have burgers. You know? It's like the Metropolitan Grill burger. Like, I'm not going to go get that. I want it to be kind of this in-between of, like, mostly a burger place and relatively, like, convenient.
Yeah. We should do someplace in the U District next week if you can make it out, because I'm going there for the UW women's basketball game on Saturday, so.
Oh, crap. I'll go to that women's basketball game.
There you go.
Should we talk about UW women's basketball?
Kelsey Plum Senior Day coming up this Saturday. Yeah, we can start off the Seattle Sports Roundup with the UW women's basketball team. which sadly, coming off a loss last weekend at UCLA, lost 90-79 on Friday before rebounding to win 87-74 on Sunday at USC. So basically what this means is any hope the Huskies had of finishing in the top two of the conference is pretty much gone now that they, you know, not only are behind in the a game behind in the standings of Oregon State and Stanford, but also don't have the tiebreaker with those two teams, again, having lost the one head-to-head matchup with each of them.
How is UCLA, by the way?
They're the fourth. They're the clear fourth best team in the conference. I mean, it's not an embarrassing loss or anything. Okay. UCLA moved up to 15th in the rankings, I believe. UW now 11th in the coaches' poll, 12th in the AP poll.
Okay.
I have that backwards. 11th in the AP.
NCAA tournament S curve yet?
I did not see that today.
Okay.
So this weekend they're back home, finishing the Pac-12 regular season schedule against Colorado and Utah. And again, Saturday will be senior day for Kelsey Plum and Chantel Osahor, the driving forces behind
what time is
the
that
team
game?
The last 2 years. I think 1:30.
Oh, man. I don't see any reason not to go.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm actually going to be covering the game for ESPN.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because there's an outside shot that Kelsey Plum becomes the all-time leading scorer in women's Division I history this weekend.
How many points does she need?
So, first off, she passed Brittany Griner last week.
I turned that game on. That was, I think, the first time that I've just randomly turned on a Husky women's game.
Nice. She is 78 points behind Jackie Stiles for number one.
Okay, this is two games. She'll have played a game before.
Yeah. Thursday against Colorado, Saturday.
Yes, okay. I was going to say, that would be a very good. She's not LaMelo.
No, Ball. Yeah, no. I wasn't getting at that. I mean, even the two games is a long shot. She'll probably do it in the Pac-12 tournament the following weekend.
Also in Seattle, though.
Yes. So that's the good news is, unless something goes really haywire, she's going to do it in Seattle. So that'll be cool.
It was interesting watching the game and seeing that there are moments where the offense is perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're just like firing on all cylinders. Kelsey Plum is doing amazing Kelsey Plum things. But then I feel like there are times where the offense just kind of forgets to give Kelsey Plum the ball.
I don't know. People say that sometimes. Like people said that about Fultz, and he had a 30% usage rate in conference play. I think the thing that can happen sometimes is, you know, I've never seen like an analysis of the X's and O's of the UW women offense, but I think that kind of what they do reminds me of what's known as the dribble drive motion. Famously, John Calipari uses it at Kentucky. George Karl hired the architect of it, Vance Wahlberg, on his coaching staffs in Denver and Sacramento. And the idea of the dribble drive motion is basically like there's not a lot of pick and roll necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of like one-on-one on the perimeter. And if you don't have an advantage off the drive, then you kick it to someone else who tries to get that.
Okay.
So it is maybe a little more democratic in that standpoint because you're not necessarily calling specific plays all the time.
There were a series of plays, and things didn't go well when she'd have the ball.
Yes. Yeah, because of the fact that if it's this whole thing of you're trying to beat your defender one-on-one, well, Kelsey Plum's a lot more likely to do that than anyone else on the roster. Man.
When Kelsey Plum does have the ball, it's like she's almost unstoppable.
Yep.
I mean, there's a reason that she's going to be the all-time leading scorer in all of women's college basketball.
Yeah.
But almost unstoppable when she has the ball. And partially just because she's so good at creating her own shot, getting to the hoop, can shoot a jumper, but then also a little bit tenacious at getting the ball back. Yep. Like, if she misses a shot, she's following up on the shot.
She's feisty.
And then gets to the line a lot. I mean, it was pretty amazing to watch.
Yeah, she's great. Saying it for a long time.
You mentioned Markel Fultz.
Who returned last weekend.
Thank God. At least the games were watchable.
But sadly, his return was not enough to propel the Huskies to a win over Arizona State on Thursday as they fell 83-81 in another close loss.
Yep. No, it was kind of a fun conclusion. You said you were watching this in New Orleans with Screamin' I. Smith.
By the end, because of the fact that I got the sense that they were really going to actually kick me out of the bar, I went back upstairs to stream the like last 4 minutes.
It was kind of an insane last 4 minutes.
Well, yeah. I mean, the technical foul there at the end that gave the Huskies a chance.
Yeah, that was a very strange end of the game. And to me, and we should do this at some point, top five rules that you would change in college basketball. But not advancing the ball.
Yes.
It's just like the end of that game could have been so much more interesting.
But who threw the inbounds pass?
I think it was what's his name? The guy, the white guy.
Kingma. Yeah, Dan Kingma. Yeah, they were saying it was like his baseball experience. And
it was a good pass.
Threw a very good pass to Fultz at half court. I thought they were going to try to hit him on the move, but instead they threw it to Fultz with his back to the basket at half court. He shoots a turnaround three, and it caught rim.
Oh, I thought it was going.
Very close. I
thought it was going.
Then on Saturday, I think a solid performance by the Huskies against a really good Arizona team that was down a couple key players. Dusan Ristić sat out. Forget who else was out of that game. But ultimately, Arizona pulled away, had too much late.
You weren't able to really watch this game, were you?
I streamed a little bit of it on my computer during All-Star Saturday.
It was a much closer game than that score would indicate.
Right.
There was a possession late in the game where Carlos Johnson was called for an offensive foul. Pretty egregious offensive foul. I mean, basically, everything about these games boils down to Pac-12 refs.
I suppose.
It was an egregious offensive foul, and then Carlos Johnson followed it up by getting an offensive goaltending. I'm screaming at the TV at this point.
Yeah.
It was an offensive goaltending where it's like, this is obviously going to be an offensive goaltending. What are you doing, Carlos?
I mean, it's hard to be too upset at Carlos Johnson because, you know, he's trying so hard, and he had a couple of an outstanding game against Arizona State. He really was key to the Huskies being in that game after they fell behind so badly.
Because he drew that technical foul.
No, I mean, he had 19 points and 12 rebounds.
No, Carlos Johnson is really trying.
And it stands out in contrast to some of the rest of the team.
But I thought the thing that was most interesting about it is this was, it's kind of crazy to say, one of the better weekends of basketball that this team has played.
Yeah, I think so.
Considering that they lost two games at home, it's kind of crazy to think. But the thing that stood out to me was how good the big men can be with Malik Dimebag.
I think we underrated his absence due to injury. Because, you know, he's not a great player, but he's an excellent shot blocker. And the one thing I noted at one point was the Huskies just like didn't have anyone who could finish above the rim as a big man. Sam Timmons, when I looked this up last week on Synergy Sports, had three dunks all season. And Matthew Attaway was not, I don't think his total was very high either.
But Dime also not just finishing. I mean, he's a rim protector.
Yeah. Had four blocks on Saturday.
I like what Malik Dime does. And then having Timmons,
you're not counting slapping fans among that category.
I mean, I don't dislike that either. let's consider me neutral on that. but having Sam Timmons come off the bench is not that bad, right?
Yeah,
he's not a bad backup Pac-12 center. All of a sudden, it's like this team. You can see glimpses of like this looks like a competent team, but I mean, then they do lose to both Arizona State and Arizona.
And are 2-13 in conference play, having lost their last nine in a row.
So what's left for the Huskies?
So on Sunday, they face Wazoo in basically their last real chance to win a game in the regular season. And then they close out Pac-12 play by traveling to UCLA and USC.
I keep waiting for the win. I was going to say, if they would have beaten Arizona, this is like a save Romar's job win.
Yeah, that it just hasn't been there.
Yet. No, So
it's interesting to look at Wazoo, and I think that first UW-Wazoo matchup in the opening game of Pac-12 play turned out to, in many ways, be a precursor of the difference between these two teams' seasons. The Huskies have a slightly better net rating, like per possession in conference play, than Washington State does. They're 2-13. Wazoo is somehow 5-10.
What?
Because they like either get blown out or they win a close game. It's an exceedingly odd, completely unsustainable season. They have very little talent, are tough to watch, and yet they are somehow 5-10 in conference play. I guess that's not completely fair. They only have two really close wins. They beat Arizona State by 8 and then on the road and then by 15 at home in Pullman, and beat Oregon State by 13 for their other conference win.
They just haven't been as consistent as the Huskies have been, being kind of bad.
Yeah, they also lost by 32 at Colorado. They lost by 19 at home. They lost by 41 at home to Utah, by 30 at Stanford. How did that happen?
Okay, and then a quick roundup for some of the other Seattle sports teams. Let's start with the Sonics Arena.
Yeah, I think this is something that as long as we have news, we want to keep coming back to on a weekly basis. So the news last week was that Chris Hansen, the head of the Sonics Arena Group, paid a visit to Seattle, did a media tour talking to a variety of local radio stations, local TV stations, news reporters. And also while he was in town, Hansen, Wally Walker, and Russell Wilson dropped in to meet with Lorena Gonzalez. And you may recall that Lorena Gonzalez is the member of the Seattle City Council who reportedly told colleagues, according to a Chris Daniels report on King5.com, that she planned to vote yes on the street vacation the afternoon it took place, but instead voted no and cast the decisive vote 5-4 against. So she seemed pretty chummy in the photo, I would say, with that group.
Russell Wilson's there.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's not chummy with Russell Wilson?
I mean, that's the key thing to me here is, like, all they have to do is flip one vote. Yeah. That's all.
Do you feel like the other votes are set?
I think so. I don't know that for sure, but I think so. I mean, because it's a better deal now than it was, you know, when they went for the street vacation originally, now that it's fully privately funded.
Yes. So you said last week that they would have to do some outreach.
Yes.
Sway some public opinion.
Yes.
This is basically what you're talking at.
Absolutely.
Everything that Chris Hansen did this week, most importantly, what Chris Hansen, Wally Walker, and Russell Wilson did by meeting with Lorena Gonzalez.
I mean, that's more important. Like, public opinion is so nebulous and impossible to gauge. Like, if you're a member of the Seattle City Council, you can convince yourself that public sentiment is behind whichever side you decide.
Yes.
So I think it probably is more about that personal outreach with the council members.
Look, having Russ involved, come on.
Yeah.
How do you go into a meeting and say no to him? was there any news for the Key Arena group?
I don't think so. Did you see any?
There was a new podcast this week for the podcast that you were listening to.
Yeah, the Seattle Growth Podcast. This week they focused on kind of the port side of the argument. I haven't listened to that as yet because there were 10,000 NBA podcasts the last 2 days.
That you had to listen to.
And participate in much of the time.
Okay. The Sounders ambling toward the regular season.
Wait, what was that?
Ambling toward the regular season.
Okay. Well, I'll buy that. Last Saturday, they began play in this tournament in Charleston with a 1-1 draw against the Charleston Battery, conceding the tying goal in stoppage time of the end of the second half. The more important thing there, that obviously, than the outcome, is the fact that Clint Dempsey started again and played 60 minutes. So
Clint's back.
Yeah, continuing to move towards really being 100% for the start of the season. This week they will play two preseason matches in Charleston. They'll face Atlanta United, one of the new MLS teams coming into play this year. And then that'll be Wednesday. And then Saturday they face the Columbus Crew.
And these are all in Charleston?
Yes.
Why are they hanging out in Charleston?
It's, you know, they have the Tucson, and then this is their other kind of version of spring training.
Really?
Where you bring all the teams together so they can play against...
Oh, all the teams are there. Everybody's
not in Charleston. Not everyone, but I mean, like, there's a number of teams that you can play a variety of different opponents.
Chalk this up to something that we would have been completely unaware of in the pre-internet era.
Yep, that's true.
I mean, I was unaware of this as of last year.
The other interesting news in MLS last week, I don't know if you saw this.
No.
Freddie Montero.
I mean, I don't know. You haven't told me what it is, but
Freddie Montero is signing with the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Wait, where was he at?
I think he was playing in China previously. So he had been in Portugal for a while, and then I think he went to China, and Gustav Svensson, am I remembering his name correctly?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, close enough. He also, I think, was perhaps a victim of the move to only allowing two international players.
Is Freddie Montero a designated player for Vancouver, or is he just...
I think so, but that I did not look up.
I guess my question is Freddie Montero still good?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, he's not old.
Man. It's kind of sad seeing him on the hated Vancouver Whitecaps.
Yeah, it was interesting. Brad Evans apparently had a tweet saying, you know, like, I know the MLS allocation system is messed up, but I would never play for a rival.
Wow.
Oh, I guess I'm sorry. Technically, he's on loan from his Chinese club because of that rule.
So that's Brett Evans. That he really would never play.
Yeah, it was a little crazy to me too. I agree.
This isn't Vancouver against Seattle. Isn't exactly Duke North Carolina Yankees Red Sox.
Right. It's not like he's playing for Portland here.
Even still, he's being loaned.
Yeah.
What is he supposed to do about it?
I mean, you have some say over that. But yeah.
Okay, and the regular season is starting.
Well, this is the last weekend of the preseason, and then the weekend after that will be the first match on Saturday, March 4th.
March 4th?
Yeah.
Wow, so next week we're going to be previewing a regular season MLS match.
That is correct, yes.
Oh, man.
We'll have to do our giant Sounders preseason preview, our bold predictions for the season to come. Just our game-by-game analysis. We're going to go through and pick the outcome of each game.
Yep.
You know, I'm going with draw every single time is the most likely outcome.
That seems fair. I just can't believe we're like, it feels like the regular season just ended because the regular season just ended.
Yep.
And it's actually going to be the regular season again. Wow.
That, by the way, so to the listener.
Yes.
This will be confusing since you were the one who came up with it. But now you can follow along and play Peltoncast bingo. We tweeted that out from @Peltoncast. Thanks to listener Ben B for putting that together. And the length of the MLS regular season has to become a square on there. Because that's something we talk about all the time. I don't know if we're leaning into ticking off all the categories. Like, I was thinking about it when I did a toast. I was going to do a toast anyway, but I was thinking about it.
Man, you did a toast to me. That makes me feel kind of sad.
Yeah, but you were the second toast.
Okay. You're just saying that you're toast to me. It's almost like it doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count.
Okay.
The square was already checked. It doesn't even matter.
Should we wrap things up by talking about the Seahawks? A little bit of offseason news.
Yeah, not a lot here. Running backs coach Sherman Smith, who we knew had left the coaching staff, did an interview last week with ESPN 710 where he said that he was fired, was let go by the team.
Yeah, that's the big coaching offseason change. This is what all fans were looking for.
Yes. That's what they were thinking was the culprit for the team's offense last year was the running back coach. Yeah, you don't see a lot of turnover necessarily on the Seahawks staff unless it's people getting better jobs elsewhere. So this was a little out of the ordinary.
There's a little bit of criticism of Pete in his statement. Did you read it?
Yeah.
He's saying that he's looking for like young running around rah-rah guys or whatever. Yeah. I love the idea that Pete Carroll is firing somebody for being old.
But, you know, if at a certain point you don't no longer adhere to kind of the Pete Carroll philosophy of the energy he wants from his coaches, then, you know, that kind of happens.
So one thing that we can wrap up with here is this last week, Bill Barnwell.
Friend of the podcast, Bill Barnwell.
Moderate friend.
Good friend.
This is what I never listen. I know that there was a debate about whether you were a good friend of the Ringer NFL.
By the way, I'm going on Barnwell's podcast tomorrow.
Are you?
Yeah.
To talk boogie?
Talk trade deadline.
Oh, you're going to tell all the same stories. You're going to be like, and guess who is there? Solange, of all people. Can you believe it?
You know, you guys will get this hours earlier.
That's you on the Barnwell show.
You, the listener, will get this hours earlier.
You're going to be like, so they give you beignets. You can get beignets a couple of different ways.
I feel like Barnwell and I could trade some New Orleans food stores. I'm sure he's been to New Orleans.
That's what I'm imagining the whole thing.
I also bet he's eaten an oyster.
You're like, so anyway, I came up with a list of 16 burgers here.
So Barnwell, about Kelsey Plum.
I don't know why I imagine you're doing the exact same podcast with Bill Barnwell.
I've just got the same notes in front of me.
And he's like, Sonia, I want to wrap things up by telling you my five ideas for the Seahawks this offseason. anyway. Bill Barnwell. Made a list of five things that each team throughout the NFL should consider looking at for the offseason. Did the NFC West this last week. So the Seahawks, I want to run through these one by one.
Yep.
And see what we thought of them. So number one of Bill Barnwell's suggestions was reevaluate left tackle and left guard and right guard, implying basically the entire offensive line.
Yes. I mean, he did go on to say that, you know, he felt like Ifedi and Britt were solid in their
spots. He's forgetting
spots.
About right tackle here. Right guard is one of our positions we're good at.
Yeah. So I think that got messed up a little bit in the title there. But I don't know. I think Barnwell, like Seahawks fans, is probably more into the idea of signing veteran free agents than I am.
Yeah, it's funny because we talked about this in the end of the year pod and basically determined, you and I both agreed, you find your group of guys and stick with them. Finding veteran free agents, any time that the Seahawks sign a veteran free agent, as long as they're not a defensive lineman, I will say that that veteran free agent will not make the team.
No, it's always 100%
of the time.
It's always going to be your bold prediction. Yeah,
or, and I'm right most of the time.
At least not finish the season on the team.
Yes, because Antoine Winfield made the team.
No, you're thinking of Kerry Williams. Right?
Oh, Kerry Williams. Antoine Winfield was cut before the season. Yeah, that was a great bold prediction that I had.
Yep.
Kerry Williams made the team and then was subsequently cut.
That is correct.
Is there anybody else that you can even think of who the Seahawks have brought in as a veteran free agent? It basically never happens. And it ain't going to happen. Sorry, Bill Barnwell. It's just not going to happen. This is the group of guys. They might draft somebody, but they're not going to sign a free agent on the offensive line.
I mean, I'm not going to rule anything out.
Look, 100%. No chance.
Wow. That take
Boogie is not getting traded.
That take got 20% hotter. The one thing I'd be curious about, I bet Football Outsiders have studied this in the past, and maybe I need to go back and look through some of my old Football Outsiders almanacs. Like, how much does it actually help your offensive line when you sign, like, an elite offensive line free agent, given what we know about the importance of continuity?
I mean,
I'm skeptical that it's really that much of a difference maker. Now, granted, when you're starting as poor as the Seahawks were, it may be easier for it to be a difference maker.
As a George Fant apologist...
Oh, We love rationalizing George Fant's performance.
I'm especially upset with the line, but it's downright dangerous to go into 2017 with George Fant at left tackle. It's like right tackle to me is a much, much less set position than left tackle.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I understand his point. The Seahawks are bad on the offensive line. Look, we get it.
I mean, Barnwell is a 12, so he has to feel upset about the offensive line. We're the ones who are not Seahawks fans in this regard.
Wait, what? Oh, because we think that we should just leave the offensive line. We should be a lot angrier. Our takes should be like 20% hotter about the offensive line.
60% hotter.
At number two, leave the Jimmy Graham contract alone.
No argument there.
Of course. I mean, it's...
Well, I mean, the idea of signing him to an extension is, I think, a realistic possibility, but... Yeah. I don't think it's a necessary thing.
No.
Yeah.
And number three, add depth at defensive tackle.
Yeah, I mean, Earl Mitchell already came through town. It seems like the Seahawks are on board here.
Absolutely. And to me, this is a place where they will add depth. They will add veteran depth, and it could make a difference.
We had a little bit of a conflict, I would say, on Seahawks Twitter last week.
Did we?
Because Zach Whitman was pointing out how great Earl Mitchell's spark score was.
Oh,
and then our loyal listener, Ben B., pointed out his performance has not quite lived up to that.
It's not quite matched his spark score.
Which is probably part of the reason why he was waived and is available to sign with teams right now.
I mean, there are players who were waived and available to sign with teams that the Seahawks have turned into quality defensive linemen.
That's certainly true. I'm not saying it's a reason not to. I'm just saying it's not a sure thing.
And to me, it's all about just adding bodies to the defensive line. Right, making sure that you have a very solid rotation, and then also finding people who can fit very specific niche roles.
Yeah,
this to me, of all the things that Bill Barnwell suggests, is the most important and the most likely to actually happen.
Oh,
well,
nice.
I guess they're going to leave Jimmy Graham's contract alone.
Well, again, I don't think they're going to waive him, but they could extend him.
Number four, draft a strong side linebacker.
Yeah, I don't know about this one. As Barnwell actually points out here, Mike Morgan played less than 13% of defensive snaps last year. I mean, that was partially because of his injury, but also because strong side linebacker just isn't a starting position for the Seahawks anymore and for most teams in the league.
I mean, they may draft a strong side linebacker.
Just in terms of competition and depth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be priority number one. I still think draft-wise, priority number one is either probably offensive line or cornerback.
Yeah.
The fact that finding a cornerback is not on this list is kind of shocking to me, considering they had maybe 1.5 good cornerbacks last year, and the half is injured for all of next season.
That is very true.
With Jeremy Lane still around. At number five, target Adrian Peterson or Jamal Charles in free agency if their market crashes.
So this is interesting.
Do not agree. This is the thing that I disagree with the most of any of these things.
I mean, Depends how crashed their market is. I don't think Adrian Peterson realistically is getting there. Jamal Charles might, though.
Look, he's not going to make the team. If they sign him, they'll cut him before the regular season.
I mean, the big thing question to me here is if you would want to use a roster spot on one of these players when you're excited about the potential of many of your young running backs, Alex Collins, I mean, I'm taking, you know, it is a point of fact at this point that CJ Procise would be on the roster, but then also Tremaine Pope.
Young Pope. A lot of great running backs. I mean, what is the point of bringing in a running back?
This strategy might have worked with old running backs, but this is the young Pope we're talking about.
Okay. Look, Thomas Rawls is still the starting running back and will be a good running back again.
Probably.
Then you add into the mix CJ Procise, who people have just determined can't be an every down running back, which I do not agree with.
I'm not sure that I believe that there is such a thing as injury prone.
What? You don't know if you believe in injury prone?
Yeah, I don't know that there's such a thing as proneness to injury. I mean, like, if you have a specific injury that is likely to recur, like, you know, if you tore your meniscus and therefore have, like, wear and tear on your
knee.
Remember
when Steph Curry was injury prone?
Yeah.
Remember when Brandon Roy was injury prone?
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. That's like a degenerative injury. That's the kind of thing that's not getting better. But like,
remember when Tony Romo was injury prone?
CJ Procise broke his clavicle? I can't even remember what his injury was anymore.
Yeah.
But it's a broken bone. I don't think that like some people really have more fragile bones than other people. I think it's just randomness, and humans are trained to see patterns in randomness.
There we go. Small sample size.
Yeah.
But also, CJ Procise, there's this dialogue that feels like he can't be an every down running back. Which the thing that I don't believe in is the notion of every down running backs.
That's a valid argument. Yeah, that's a
good one. Know about your opinion about injury proneness, but I don't believe in the idea that there's one running back who you can run on first and second down and another running back who you can run on third down. If you can run on first and second down, you can run on third down and vice versa.
Well, I mean,
CJ Procise can do everything. Yeah. He can do it all.
I mean, as he did against the New England Patriots, when, not to put too fine a point on it, the Seahawks became the only team to beat the Patriots with Tom Brady this season.
And would have won the Super Bowl if CJ Procise didn't get injured. Mark my words, right here.
Oh, wow.
A toast to the Seahawks Super Bowl victory. In the alternate world where CJ Procise didn't get injured.
Third in the last 4 years for the Seahawks.
We still lost that game at the Panthers.
Yeah, I mean, I really didn't have a good rationalization for that one.
If only there was one more quarter. One more quarter! but, I mean, I don't see this happening. I don't see the need for this. I mean, you talk about getting younger with your running backs coaches. Why would you all of a sudden want to get older with your running backs?
I don't know if those are quite the same thing, but okay.
How about this? There's no team in the league that looks at their running backs and says, you know, we could really get older there.
I bet there are some teams that do that. But that's
John Lynch is definitely saying that right now. But that's the 49ers front office being like, how can we get older at all these positions?
That's the whole point, though, is that if that market is so low for them, like there comes a point where, you know, an older running back becomes an undervalued asset. This old running backs are the new money ball.
That's ridiculous.
That's what I'm saying here.
I'm trying to think of an actual example of this.
Of like who has been a successful like running back to sign on the cheap? I don't know.
Young free agent running backs are always a good value. There's a lot of them.
Like undrafted free agents or?
Of any kind. Late draft picks, undrafted free agents, getting running backs from any place you can find a human being to run the ball.
It's true.
But this falls under your any chance rule, right?
Yes.
It's like, this is basically an if rule. If so-and-so happens, then they should do this. It's like, okay, sure. Like, I guess. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just an idea that people weren't thinking about that Parnell wanted to throw out there.
Okay, well, if Russell Wilson has a career-ending injury, they should trade for Tony Romo.
Why would you even speak that into existence?
I'm just saying, if anything happens, then they should do this thing.
I'm going to stop this podcast right now before this goes any further.
I just made an if rule. It's a good rule.
I don't think it is. I'm still not sure what the rule is exactly.
The rule is...
There isn't a rule.
if you're adding a stipulation, if something happens, then this.
Wait, does it?
Sure.
Your if stipulation started with an if. Did you notice that?
This is the worst rule.
Stop dating. Concede what you've lost this one.
I'm going to fine-tune this rule.
All right. Come back next week better. Maybe we'll be back in Renton on your home turf. You'll bring a little stronger effort.
Of the rule. Okay. So anyway, dicks. And I had that list fine-tuned.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.